of strikes of the season.
Rooney! Oh, wonderful! What a goal! And what a time! And what a play! What a player!
McLaren! Oh, this is incredible!
Post goals! What about that? Terry M! Absolutely sensational!
Just magnificent!
And Smith!
His Park! It is six!
Berbatov! Keane!
Beckham! Into Sheringham, and Solskjaer has won it! Manchester United have reached the promised land!
Rashford has got the dream goal!
Hello and welcome to Series 1, Episode 15 of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. Find us on Twitter at UTD Weekly Pod. I'm Harry Robinson, and as always, I'm joined by Jack Tate to discuss Marcus Rashford becoming the hero again at West Ham in the Cup, and as poor a win as possible, against relegated Aston Villa. Also, we preview the next round of the Cup, the semi-final at Wembley. But before that, the midweek match against Crystal Palace.
Towards Memphis, bouncing around, Mata to cut it back again. And Rashford has got the dream goal that he was looking for in his debut. And one he will never, ever forget. Written in the stars.
Jack, we'll start off with West Ham. Perhaps the most exciting game that we've had this week after that dull win, I guess you could call it, against Aston Villa. I'd say it was a great night, to be honest.
I actually really enjoyed watching the game as well, which isn't something I've been able to say that often this season watching United. I thought we actually played pretty well. Yeah, the whole team seemed to work quite well. Credit to Van Gaal for his team selection as well, because it paid off really, really well. West Ham weren't at their best, but I thought we controlled them quite well. We dealt with the threat of Andy Carroll, obviously on a high after his hat trick last weekend. No, I thought it was a good game. We controlled the game well and we looked dangerous, which is something that we haven't done for the majority of this season.
Yeah, you have to say that it's quite stark that while we were celebrating a win against West Ham in the FA Cup quarterfinal replay, having drawn at home, Liverpool were in the semi-final of the Europa League and City in the semi-final of the Champions League. So obviously there's that precursor to it, but it doesn't take away from what I thought was a great night, because last FA Cup tie at the Berlin ground, the Optus Park, whatever you want to call it, and I have to say that Olympic Stadium deal that has finally come out into the public made me extremely angry, but final cup tie at yeah. Upton Park, and it was a night to remember properly, to give it its good farewell. And of course, Rashford again just keeps on going in these incredible moments. You think about it now, debut two goals against Midtjylland. It's not just his debut, he scored two goals. He got us into that tie again and got us through to Liverpool. All right, we didn't get through then, but he got us against Midtjylland. It would have been embarrassing if we'd gone out there. Two goals to derail Arsenal's title challenge. All right, we should be challenging for the title, but it's still good. It's important.
Yeah.
Plus the Derby goal, plus West Ham at Upton Park. I mean, apart from the Villa goal that he's just scored, we'll move on to that in a second. They're such key, vital goals. Not just sort of unimportant goals that we're celebrating because he's an academy graduate.
Yeah, it's really quite staggering to me how quickly he's settled in, and like I say, how much he forms in the most important games. It's, you know, because of the state of our season right now, I guess we don't have games maybe as big as we would have hoped at this stage of the season. But by the same token, every game that we've played that has had kind of added importance, he performed brilliantly. And like you said, the game against Midtjylland, okay. Midtjylland might not be an amazing team, but we needed to put out a good performance against them, and he did that. The same thing against Arsenal. It's always a good game against Arsenal, no matter what the circumstances are around it. Same with the Derby, and then against West Ham when we needed that performance to go through to the semi-final. So, I mean, I've been staggered, honestly, because, you know, I watched him a few times in the under-21s, and he looked a good talent, but he didn't look like someone who was guaranteed to take the first team by storm if he got a chance. But I mean, the way he's come in and he's just performed magnificently the whole time. And I'm so impressed with him.
Yeah. And the hold up play, I think we've mentioned this ever since he's broken through, but the hold up play at Upton Park for that Lingard chance, that as always with Lingard, his movement and his spatial awareness is incredible, but it's his finishing that lets him down. And Rashford's footwork for that Lingard chance, I think he dribbled through three West Ham defenders to provide
and the referee
that.
Had to get out of the way,
yeah. I mean, it's that kind of get off your seat stuff that has endeared him to the United support so much, not just the goals, and obviously Derby, Arsenal, and getting us through a European competition has helped as well. Let's move back in the team, right back to David De Gea. He's perhaps the only other contender for man of the match. Those two, the striker and our goalkeeper. What a last 10 minutes they had.
My heart was in, well and truly in my mouth in that last 10 minutes.
Yeah, I know. I don't think I've had that feeling for a long time, that sort of sick feeling as you get into true squeaky bum time.
Yeah, and it was just strange because it really came out of nothing. West Ham hadn't looked too threatening the whole game. Didn't look like sort of they were up to much going forward, and then just suddenly out of nowhere, our team just, it took me back to Diego Costa's last minute goal winner for Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. Like, we just, it looked inevitable that West Ham were going to score, but yet again, we were indebted to our goalkeeper. And what a player he is.
Yeah, Van Gaal got quite angry at James Ducker for asking about De Gea's future, and even asked for an apology for saying he came close to leaving, which is incredible because everyone really knows that he did come close to leaving. It was just a fax machine. I would think that De Gea would go if we didn't get Champions League football, but A, I don't know if Real Madrid want him that desperately because they've got Keylor Navas, a great keeper, and the fans are quite happy with Keylor Navas, honestly. And De Gea looks pretty content, doesn't he? I mean,
yeah.
Obviously, like, you can't really tell from a celebration of a goal. Obviously, he's going to celebrate winning, but he just seems to be connecting with the fans more. He went over to the fans the other day and started clapping and applauding them, and I think that was, obviously, I don't really know anything, but from what I can see on the pitch, at least, it doesn't seem like he's desperate to leave or anything.
No, I'd agree. Like, I think if he was really desperate to leave, I think he would seem quite disconnected from the players, from the fans, and it doesn't seem to be anything like that. I think he seems as though he's enjoying his football as much as he has at any point during his United career, honestly. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what will happen this summer, because like you said, logic kind of tells you that if we don't get Champions League, he is likely to want to leave again. But I don't know. You think about where we were at this stage last season when we were getting Champions League, all the rumours and everything about it, they were so much stronger than they are now. So I'm not sure.
Let's move on to his defence in front of him. Fosu Mensah, Blind had brilliant games. Fellaini, Lingard, I thought both had brilliant games. Let's talk about Fosu Mensah. We said this last week. We said it the week before. What a talent this boy is, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. He just keeps surprising you all the time because every time he gets given a new challenge, he just steps up to the plate all the time. And against West Ham, you know, their attacking lineup this season, especially in the last few weeks, has been absolutely rampant. He dealt with that kind of Payet, Lanzini, Creswell sort of triangle brilliantly.
Payet swapped wings to challenge Fosu Mensah. And after he swapped wings, he was kept pretty quiet. Fosu Mensah did stupidly give away a free kick, but apart from that one incident, he wasn't quite as good as Dejan Rashford, but what a performance. And I saw someone who follows the youth quite closely, Doran Salomon, I think, asked why he can't be tried in midfield. Because he'd be a great ball-playing centre-back, but as a defensive midfielder, he's got the physicality already and he's 18. He's clearly got the composure. Yeah, if we don't have a centre-back, fine, you can shift him in there, but I think he has the quality and the attributes. He's good enough as a player of the ball to be tried in midfield.
Yeah, he does seem to have the attributes, doesn't he? I mean, you can see from the way that he reads the game as well that he really is really, really comfortable in kind of stepping into midfield, making some good interceptions wherever he can as well. And quite a lot of the time he ended up stepping into midfield against West Ham anyway through, you know, if he was pressing the opposition quite high up the pitch, and then he'd nip and win the ball and he'd end up starting a counter-attack anyway and he'd end up playing as kind of like a central midfielder. No, I think it could definitely be something to be looked at. I mean, you'd have to ask why you'd move him from where he's been so successful right now, but I think it does look like somewhere that he may be able to play quite well.
More interceptions than anyone but Antonio, more clearances than anyone. We're talking about that passing, 78 pass accuracy, so many tackles, so many aerial duels won when he came against quite a physical side with Andy Carroll. Onto that physical side of things, I thought Fellaini dealt quite well with it, apart from the goal that allowed, when he allowed Tompkins to bravely head into a Fellaini flying boot and score. Apart from that, I thought he really did help in the physical battle, and a lot of people were angry when they saw the team selection, but at the time I thought, well, yeah, I don't like seeing Fellaini in the United lineup, but perhaps this is one of those games where you just have to play your big man with the afro.
Yeah, I mean, credit where credit's due. He actually had a great game, I thought. Well, certainly one of his best in a United shirt, I think. And funny enough, obviously, I assume the main reason that he was in the team was because of the threat from Andy Carroll to try and deal with that aerial threat. But even going forward on the ball, he was a lot more composed than he normally is. Didn't give the ball away too much. He was actually quite a good kind of transition from kind of defence to attack quite a lot of time. There's a few storming runs that he made. One for there's one where he probably should have slid it left to Martial instead. He passed it to Rashford and his shot got deflected wide. And there was a couple of other times where he'd pick the ball up on a half turn and he'd make the sort of kind of surging runs from midfield into attack that we're used to seeing from Wayne Rooney, let alone Marouane Fellaini.
A bit of praise for Daley Blind, who we're talking about a ball-playing defender with Fosu Mensah. Daley Blind's exceptional against West Ham, really exceptional. He created two chances for the goal in the build-up to them. And Michael Carrick, I questioned for MUFC latest in an article whether he should be given a new contract. I said probably not, and if he is, then it has to be only 1 year. But to be fair to him, he controlled the game, and it's the rarity of those performances which is worrying, but when they do come, they're really excellent and Carrick's good. Ander Herrera and Marcus Rojo are probably the only sort of negative points on the game.
They're two sort of strange cases at the moment, I think. I mean, I've never been convinced by Rojo. I think, like quite a lot of United fans, it's getting to the point now where we've seen no improvement from him almost consistently throughout his whole time at United. And so you begin to then question whether he's really worthy of staying. Herrera frustrates me a lot because we've seen some performances from him in the last like couple of seasons where you know that he does have a lot of quality, but just for whatever reason, this season, he really has been woeful for the vast majority of it. And I hate to be just so bluntly critical about it, but I mean, it really has been, it's been shocking at times. And I mean, it wasn't his worst game in the season against West Ham, but it just doesn't seem to be, for whatever reason, he just doesn't seem capable of reaching those heights that we have seen.
Yeah, because we had those incredibly good performances where everyone thought this guy can properly control our midfield for the next few years. And I think that's still playing on people's minds when they don't see him in the starting lineup. But for all of Van Gaal's ridiculous starting 11s, where he's put Fellaini in the most ridiculous of circumstances, and Herrera at the moment doesn't really deserve a chance. And when he has been given those chances, very rare though they are, so it is hard for him to take them by the scruff of the neck when they come so rarely, but when he has been given them, he hasn't impressed hugely.
Yeah, absolutely. So I tweeted on the night of the West Ham, I think at half time, that, you know, I like Herrera, but he has just been so poor this season. A lot of people reply with that sort of argument saying, oh, but he hasn't been given a lot of chances this season. And while that might be true, he's been given enough so that if he'd have been performing well, he would have given Van Gaal no choice but to play him. And at no point has he ever really grasped that opportunity. So it's, you have to look at it both ways.
Right, let's move on to a less than scintillating game at Old Trafford this time. Perhaps a 1-0 win over Villa. Perhaps it sort of served proof to the fact that we're not what we used to be, are we? I mean, under Ferguson, this Villa side is the kind of side that would be absolutely trashed 5 or 6-0. It wasn't even that comfortable. I mean, Gested hit the post just after coming on. Kieran Clark there to save from him. Quite a good save, that, actually. And perhaps this season, I'm probably most well-defined in the fact that we scored twice against the worst side in Premier League history in two games.
I mean, yeah, it is quite ridiculous, isn't it? Like you said, it kind of summed up exactly the difference between the United of 4 or 5 years ago and the United of now. It was a really strange game. I think you summed it up really well in that it just shows the difference between United of 4 or 5 years ago and United of now. It was just such a forgettable game. I mean, the minutes seemed to go past and without anything meaningful happening at all. It was almost so comfortable, the players looked like they didn't really care. They were just going through the motions a little bit.
Yeah, I saw someone describe it as being like a pre-season game. It really was. I mean,
you thought, is this actually a Premier League game? Like, it was not that it was like terrible, terrible quality. It was just so laboured and so laid back, almost to the point where it looked, like you said, as though it was a game that didn't really count. They were just there, but just because they had to be.
I can't imagine watching that as an Aston Villa fan. I mean, what they've put their fans through this season. And fair play to them. They were a good voice at Old Trafford. They had some great songs at the start.
The worst thing for me as well was in Charlie and Nescott's comments after the game, where he said, oh, it's a good thing now that our relegation's been confirmed. At least the pressure's off. It's just...
In terms of our players, no one stood out badly or well. I mean, even Rashford I was doing player ratings, and even Rashford didn't get above a 7. Mm. He scored, but overall, no one was good. Notable mentions: Wayne Rooney, back from injury, into the starting 11, played for the under-21s for about 60 minutes, and then came on for roughly 1 minute. I think he touched the ball once at Upton Park. And a great first half to come back. Looked really sharp.
Yeah.
Some great diagonal balls to Valencia, who had loads of space on the right flank, who also was very impressive. And Antonio Valencia now has more Premier League assists than Cristiano Ronaldo and Paul Scholes.
I know, it's like, quite ridiculous, isn't it?
It's a good record. I like Valencia. He keeps working hard while he doesn't get noticed, and he keeps working hard, and I like him. He's one of those players.
We talked about it last week in the last episode, didn't we, that he's kind of player, he knows his role, but he keeps working hard and always do a job for the team whenever he's needed. I thought he was pretty good. And just to pick up on the Rooney point as well, I think, again, I just want to give a little bit of credit to Van Gaal, because I think at times when this policy of you must play for the under-21s if you had like an injury over a certain length of time, we've all been like, what on earth is he going on about? But I think it actually has helped Rooney, because we've seen in the past when he's come back from any sort of injury over sort of like a month long, he's come back and it's taken him 4 or 5 games to really get up to speed. And
he's often looked really sluggish, but coming back into the under-21 game, in that game, he looked fine. He was slightly off the pace, but he looked okay. So clearly, he's trained well to get back to this. Plus, I think that under-21 game really helped, as you said. Memphis Depay, first half, he was pretty terrible, wasn't he? But second half, I don't know what happened. But the first 10 minutes, he was absolutely ruining the Aston Villa players. He went through 3 players just by shimmying. And then an outside of the boot curling cross, which no one got onto.
Memphis Depay is a weird one for me, because I look at him and whenever I watch him play, I always feel that he's trying a bit too hard to impress, which I guess comes from the fact that obviously he hasn't gone so well from so far. He's trying to impress as much as he can. But when he seems to relax and just play his normal game, we can see how much talent he has. And we can see from some of the things that he tries to do, the things that most players wouldn't even think of trying. And he does have that ability to do it. It's just a case of getting a bit more confidence.
Yeah, it's good to see him getting started, because his confidence must have dropped so much. He had that brilliant spell against Midtjylland and Arsenal, where that's probably the best performance against Midtjylland. Yeah, of course it's Midtjylland, but in terms of entertainment from one player at United, that's one of the best performances I've seen since Cristiano Ronaldo, simply for getting you off your seat and being incredibly excited any time anyone touched the ball. Rashford, I said, wasn't that impressive, but a really good finish. It might not look like it, but to get that past a defender and a goalkeeper when it's coming at that speed is really good. And he's now scored 4 Premier League goals from 5 shots. It's been goal, 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 saved goal. pretty clinical, that. I saw someone say that it's either fluky or he's got double the finishing of Lionel Messi at his peak. So make of that what you will.
Let's hope it's the second one.
Anything else about the Aston Villa game? It really, there isn't much to talk about, is there? I thought Daley Blind had some good passing and a vital block at the end from Gusted, who came on and changed the game, but couldn't score past a very good De Gea again.
It was just one of those games that you'll look back at the end of the season and think, did I miss that game? I don't remember anything about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 3 points. It wasn't a good performance. We move on, basically.
And it'd be sad to see Aston Villa go, because that's basically been a guaranteed 6 points every season, hasn't it? I think we haven't lost, we've lost once in about 20 games or something, so
yeah,
sad to see them go and our 6 points go each season.
One of the ever presents as well, there's only, what is it, 6 left now?
Yeah, United, Arsenal, Chelsea, Tottenham.
Liverpool and Everton, I think.
Yeah.
Marcus Rashford does it again. An instant response to a loose ball. He hits, he doesn't miss.
In injury news this week, Bastian Schweinsteiger could be out for the season, according to Van Gaal, while the Dutchman said Luke Shaw is making good progress. Diego Forlan thinks that Mauricio Pochettino could be tempted by the Manchester United job, even with the excellent setup he has at Tottenham Hotspur. In transfer news, the Telegraph report that Chelsea and United are both interested in Paris Saint-Germain defender Marquinhos. Louis Van Gaal has assured fans that no one will be sold because of a possible lack of Champions League football. One player could leave his vice-captain Michael Carrick. His contract runs out in June. The Guardian suggests that Everton are interested in him. Sky Sports reported that Zlatan Ibrahimovic is interested in a Manchester United move if Van Gaal leaves this summer. We've mentioned David De Gea's quality in both match reviews. Timothy Fosu-Mensah says he can be considered as one of the world's best. Dutch under 19 international Fosu Mensah could play for Ghana instead of the Netherlands, his agent confirming they have been approached by the Ghanaian national team where his parents come from. Anthony Martial said he's working in the gym but doesn't want to lose his agility by bulking up too much. Another youngster, Marcus Rashford, will not be considered for England according to the Times, with Roy Hodgson sensibly content with his lineup at the moment. Defender Phil Jones returned for the under 21 side against Middlesbrough last week and says he knows the United players have a duty to play attractive football. He also said he's focusing on maintaining his fitness now rather than looking back at previous issues.
Arsenal struggling to keep pace with him.
Oh, goodness me! Unbelievable! A double-double for Marcus Rashford. With his head this time. You just can't write scripts like this.
In youth news this week, the under-21s beat Middlesbrough last week 1-0 thanks to Paddy McNair's second-half goal just after we recorded the last episode. Wayne Rooney and Phil Jones were playing in that game, as we've mentioned before. Now, there's just 2 points off the league title, this under-21 side, with 3 games to go. They play Tottenham Hotspur at White Hart Lane on Tuesday. So if you're around there, I think it's about £5 or £1 for concessions to get in and watch our under-21 side. The under-18s didn't play this week, but are 4 points off top place Swansea in Group 3 of the under-18 Premier League playoff places. With 2 games left, they can still finish top of the group, but it's very tight up there with 5 sides still within a chance of winning Group 3. The under-16s played Rotherham, Adi Barlow scored both in a 2-1 win. In youth news, Oliver Byrne has signed professional terms with Cardiff City after not being offered a contract to United. Congratulations and best of luck to him and to George Dorrington and Oliver Rathbone, who have been released. Nishan Burkhart is set to join the academy, as we reported a few weeks ago, thanks to the ever-reliable at JB_8521. Follow him on Twitter. His father and the club confirmed the signing of the Swiss under-16 striker from FC Zurich. He'll join at the end of the season and could play in the academy next year. Warren Joyce said he thinks this crop of youngsters who have broken through, like Fosu Mensah, Rashford, Cameron Borthwick-Jackson and Guillermo Varela, could be considered a class of 16 in a few years, while Nicky Butt is excited about the prospect of new signing for the young side's Matthew Olesund. And Jack, how have our loan players been doing this week?
Not too great, I must admit. Kieran O'Hara at Morecambe played the full 90 minutes. They drew 2-2. Similarly, the other goalkeeper out on loan, Dean Henderson, he also played the full 90 minutes as Stockport drew 2-2 with Corby, I believe. Tyler Blackett, Celtic, haven't played as we're recording this. Obviously, the Old Firm derby today, but don't expect him in the squad. James Wilson actually played 83 minutes for Brighton. They won 5-0. Didn't manage to get on the score sheet. It was a really, really comfortable game for Brighton, though. His strike partner actually scored a hat-trick. Ashley Fletcher, surprisingly, didn't start Barnsley this weekend. He came on and played 12 minutes. Didn't manage to get on the score sheet. Barnsley drew 0-0. And Nick Powell, obviously, is still out.
Rashford, he's in here. He scores! Marcus Rashford takes yet another step up the ladder.
And this midweek, we've got a game against Crystal Palace. Just a prediction on this, not going to spend too long on it. Palace got Wilfred Zaha, former player. First half of the season, very exciting to watch, looking very good for them. And talk of a top half of the table finish. And suddenly, after January the 1st, it's become terrible. And a few weekends ago, they got their first win of the year in the Premier League. Just a prediction for this.
I'm going to go 2-0 United.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I might say 1-0. But we can be sure that it'll probably be 0-0 at half-time, can't we?
Here's Rashford, found by Martial. Rashford, lovely feet, brilliant goal. Oh, that is a wonderful goal from a quite superb emerging Manchester United talent. Marcus Rashford, brilliantly done. West Ham 0, Manchester United 1.
And after that, we've got a much bigger game than that. Everton in the FA Cup and the semi-final at Wembley. It's been too long without the FA Cup, hasn't it? And I don't want to get too hopeful, because hope is a very annoying thing in football. But Everton, a very leaky defence, as we've seen. We scored 4 times against them this season. And for us, that is a lot of goals.
Yeah.
Prediction for this?
Oh, God. I think it's going to be tough, but I've got to be optimistic again. I'm going to go 2-1.
Well, last time you were optimistic, I said we'd lose 2-2 on penalties to West Ham, and you said 2-1 after extra time, albeit, but still, you got it right, so optimism pays off. It's hard, because obviously Everton will be going for a lot more, because when we beat them 1-0 at Old Trafford a few weeks ago for Bobby Charlton's big day, and Blind dealt with Lukaku superbly, I think they weren't going for a draw, but I think they would have been content with a draw. Whereas, obviously, at Wembley in the FA Cup semi-final, you can't get away with a draw.
We've seen quite a few times this season that Everton, although they are great going forward sometimes, when they do play that kind of quite expansive style, especially at home, they come unstuck because defensively they aren't brilliant. So I think that could end up being good for us, especially with the pace that we now have on the counter-attack. I think I wouldn't be surprised to see Fellaini starting again as well to try and deal with the threat of Lukaku, although, as you said, Blin did deal with him quite well last time. But I think that might be something that Hull tries to employ in the game. But no, I'm actually really looking forward to the semi-final. It's been, like you said, it's been too long since we've won the FA Cup. Was it now 12 years?
Yeah, we haven't been in the semi-final for that quite well either. Was it City 2011?
Yeah, we've lost our last two, haven't we? Because didn't Everton beat us in the semi-final as well?
With Phil Neville. Yeah, I think that was 2009, I think, and Fellaini was playing in that game, actually. Yeah. So there's a key for you. Yeah, so we lost to Everton and City, I think, a few years ago.
Yeah, we did lose.
Everyone says the FA Cup's obviously magic. Maybe it has a bit, but even for me, like, we're both quite young. Like, we didn't live through the Ron Atkinson years of getting to plenty of FA Cup semi-finals. But even for me, I find it just so exciting, the fact that it's a cup and there's such a prestige about it. So to win it, because I don't remember 2004. I very slightly remember us losing to Arsenal, so probably not. I don't really remember 2004, so for us to win it would just be brilliant. And even to be in the final would be great, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky enough to be at the 07 final, the first one at the new Wembley, when we lost to Chelsea. But like, even though we lost, like, at the start and during the game, it was by far the best kind of atmosphere that I've ever experienced, more so than any of, like, the big sort of, like, I've been to a Manchester derby, and I still thought that the atmosphere at Wembley that day tops it. I think it's just because it's so down to that one single game that the FA Cup will always kind of retain some of its beauty in that respect.
Yeah, because in Spain you have the two-legged Copa del Rey. I think you have a two-legged final, at least a two-legged semi-final. And I think they thought of, some people suggested a two-legged thing for the FA Cup, but it's so magic, the fact that you have to attack. There's such high scoring games, and it's just so much more exciting to watch. And yeah, it's great, the initial rounds with the smaller teams, but even when you get to the semi-finals, finals with the bigger teams, although not really that big this year, it's just, there's something about FA Cup days where you imagine these perfect days at the start of the season where it's sunny, you're walking down Wembley Way, and you're about to win the FA Cup. I think we'll win 3-2. Marouane Fellaini to score against his former club. Have we got any questions this week?
We have just the one from Colin at Ro Ronaldo, who's asked us so many questions. It's great. Thank you for that, Colin. So Colin asks, what do you think will happen with Giggs if Mourinho comes in next season?
It's tough. We briefly mentioned this, but we haven't properly discussed it. You'd assume he'd go, but education from Jose Mourinho, when you've also had it from Sir Alex Ferguson and Louis van Gaal and David Moyes, that kind of provides you with such a balanced education to then become Manchester United manager, or wherever he ends up in a managerial capacity. Being educated by the defensive, or more defensive minded Mourinho, and his sort of reputation, having been educated by Ferguson and David Moyes, who, let's not forget, is a truly good manager. It just didn't work for him at United, and Giggs says he's learned from some of his methods, and obviously learned from his mistakes as well. And Louis van Gaal, a very different manager as well. So you've got four quite similar in some senses, but also very contrasting in other ways. And I think that would really help him if he stayed. But can you see him staying? I'm not sure. I don't think he'd like the fact that his club are appointing Jose Mourinho as a fan more than anything else. And I think he might be getting tired of not being given the opportunity. Because you look at Alex Neil, 34, I think. Eddie Howe, 38. Yeah. I mean, Giggs isn't too young or anything. I think he's 42 now. So Brendan Rodgers started getting into it when he was about 40. It really is time to start a managerial job. And another 3 years waiting as assistant manager. I mean, it might be fun, but if your end goal is to be a manager, you really want to be starting now.
Yeah, the only way that I can see him staying is if it will be directed from the club, I think, because I don't see why Mourinho would particularly want to keep him. You know, Mourinho will have his own coaches, his own staff that he would want to bring in. But by a similar token, like I said, why would Giggs really want to stay when he's obviously not being given the opportunity and he's been snubbed. I think the only way that I could see it is if he had some sort of guarantee from the club that when Mourinho inevitably leaves after three seasons, that Giggs will definitely become the next manager. Because, like you said, if he does have real aspirations in terms of becoming a Premier League manager, now is the time that he needs to start. The age of managers is coming down. You look at Pep Guardiola, he's in mid 50s, or he might even be younger than that. And he's like almost achieved world domination twice over at both of his clubs so far. So yeah, I think it'd be tough to see Giggs staying unless there is some sort of guarantee from the club that he will become the next manager.
Well, yeah, you look around now, Luis Enrique, Guardiola, Zidane, Gary Neville just had a try at it, not too successfully, but Guardiola's 45. So I think he must be 3 years older than Ryan Giggs. So, I mean, Giggs looking on at that, with everyone calling in the Manchester United Guardiola, I mean, he really needs to get started now. So I think it would be good for him to stay and learn from Mourinho, to learn his mistakes and his good parts. But at a different level, he needs to get a managerial job soon. So it might be in two seasons after Mourinho or three, but really it needs to be in the next two or three seasons. And that's all we have time for today. Thank you very much for listening to Series 1, Episode 15 of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. I'm Harry Robinson, and as always, with me was Jack Tate. Jack, where can we find you on Twitter?
At United Tate, T-A-I-T.
And you can find me on Twitter at Harry Robinson 64 and the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod, P-O-D. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much for staying with us. 15 episodes, another little milestone, I guess, being a bit desperate, but enjoy the coming week with the FA Cup semi-final. It's still special. Goodbye.